Welcome to Mintcast, the podcast by the Linux Mint community for all users of Linux. This is episode 422.5, recorded on Sunday, 1st of October, 2023.
What was I saying again? Oh yeah, I'm Joe.
The magic number, I'm Majid.
And I forgot to do an intro, Eric.
So, today, in our innards section, we will be continuing talking about the wonderful world of Android. And finally, the feedback and a couple of suggestions. Now, on to the Linux innards. So, in the Linux innards, we are going to discuss a little bit something that had been discussed a couple of episodes ago about mobile phone operating systems and Linux on mobile phone operating systems. Now, some people think Android is Linux. Some people think Android is not Linux. I personally am of the opinion that Android is Linux because it uses a Linux kernel, but it's not GNU/Linux, which is what we are used to using on the desktop.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. But I also have we kind of have to preface this a little bit. A lot of this was written by Moss. So thank you, Moss. We understand you didn't want to be on the show because of personal stuff, but this is appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, Moss. You are a star. So one of the things that, and not only does it have a it has a Linux kernel, it also has, at least in some way, the kind of Linux philosophy, if you want to put it that way, in that there is an Android open source project. So whenever you have an Android distribution, and I think Android distribution, one of my friends, Matteo Doni, who's on Tech Travel Geeks and used to be on All About Android. Good guy, friend of mine. We used to be on a podcast about mobile phones 5-6 years ago together. And he said the best way to think about these Android skins is that they are different distros, in the way that in Linux you have different distros, you know, Ubuntu, Mint, Arch, Debian, whatever, and some have one particular focus, some have other particular focuses. They are different enough that you can't just say that these are just kind of a desktop environment or a launcher on top of Android. You know, there are some significant differences underneath. And so one of Android's greatest strengths and the source of occasional frustrations is its wide variety of software variations. You have the Android open source project, which is kind of sponsored by Google, AOSP, but then that is then taken by the hardware vendors, you know, Samsung, Sony, and Google themselves, and add some stuff to it. Another example, kind of analogy, would be Chromium and Google Chrome. And so all the kind of Android variants that you see, whether it's One UI, whether it's Oxygen OS, Color OS, the Pixel Launcher, etc., etc., you know, they're all based on the Android open source project. Since it's open source, anyone's free to review and contribute code and fixes to the repository. However, Google oversees its general direction and has a final say in the bulk of its development. It does receive regular bug fixes, which get packaged and delivered to Android smartphones in the form of monthly security patches. And Google unveils major new features each year at its I/O conference, with yearly releases like Android 13. Now, these aren't always without incident. So this year, for example, Android 14 should have been out by now, but something has happened, some critical bug has happened that has delayed it. And it's interesting that actually now the betas for Android 14.1, which they call QPR, you know, quarterly project releases, but it's the equivalent of point releases, have started coming out before the main one has. So there's something going on. I wouldn't be surprised actually if it's to do with that vulnerability we've been talking about, the libwp thing. Anyway, in addition to being open to contributions, Android open source is free to use under an open source license. Most manufacturers like Samsung, Sony, Google take the Android open source and fork it. Well, they, you know, build on top of it, but some fork it like we would fork a distro. So Amazon have their Fire OS and Huawei have what they now call Harmony OS, which had to be done in that way because of the sanctions that were put on by the US government. It's also important that most phone manufacturers obtain versions of AOSP from chipset vendors like Qualcomm. And this is because Android has to be tailored to a wide variety of hardware. You've got the most low-end, cheap $15, $20 devices all the way up to the, you know, $1,800 foldable Samsungs and Googles. It's also been a general cause for delayed Android updates and limited years of update support. When you compare the kind of support that Android manufacturers have been giving their devices, it's always fallen short of Apple. Things are getting a lot better now. Samsung now commit to 5 years of updates, which is actually more than Google, because Google actually only commit to 4 years of updates. But you used to have really ridiculous situations. Like, for example, I remember my son had a OnePlus, which was on Android 11, and it was guaranteed one platform update only. And it was kind of like, okay, all right. Motorola also used to be have a big problem with this. Many people saying they had phones that never received any even security updates as well. Because I suppose each company has to put the infrastructure themselves. You know, they can't just, you know, take upstream and put it down. You know, they've got their own devices with their own chipsets, you know, whether it's MediaTek or Qualcomm or whatever. Now, because it's an open source project, that means the open source community can do things. It doesn't just have to be just vendors. The one that is most commonly known is what is now called Lineage OS. It started off as CyanogenMod. So CyanogenMod was first made in 2009, entirely open source, and does have some differences with Android. For example, it has flat codec support, CPU overclocking abilities, and various other features and tweaks. Supposedly has less bloatware, and may run faster on a device than standard Android. It still uses APK as its packaging system, and it can, and you can put on Google services if you want to. Now, this was I won't say the granddaddy. There were many. I remember in the really early days of Android, 2009, 2010, 2011, there was a real massive ROMing community, which basically was distros, basically.
Oh,
you know.
The XDA heydays. And XDA is still the place to go, but it is nothing like it used to be in the
2008
through 2012 timeframe. But yeah, before CyanogenMod, there was still individuals that were doing this work. So
yeah. But it was the first one, I think, that was really caught the imagination, if you know what I mean.
It's and the one that everybody started using as a base to make their own.
Yeah, so it became kind of, if I want to put it as, if you use a Linux analogy, it became the Ubuntu, where most other ROMs were based on CyanogenMod. Okay, I know it's not 100% accurate, but it kind of gives you a flavor of the situation. And yeah, I mean, I remember those days, 2010, 2011, because you know the big companies hadn't really figured out how to optimize this open source software for their hardware, and people could do better, and people did do better, and CyanogenMod became its own thing and had a very short and unfortunate corporate career.
Yeah.
Which was it was the definition of hubris, that. Wasn't it?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my lord, yeah. It was frankly embarrassing. So I mean, I remember this. This is 2012, 2013 time. So CyanogenMod was, you know, becoming its own thing. It became a company. They started having Cyanogen Inc., which then controlled the, you know, thing. And it got a huge injection of money from Microsoft. And they started actually coming out on phones pre-installed. The OnePlus One, the first OnePlus device being Do you remember the hype for the OnePlus One?
Yeah.
Flipping hell. You can see why I have a love-hate relationship with that brand. And they came out, and I remember the CEO, whoever the CEO was, saying that, oh, we're going to destroy Google. And then about 3 months later, literally about 3 months later, the whole thing collapsed.
Yep.
And
Lineage was born as a fork.
Yeah, so Lineage then was born as a fork on one end, and the other fork of it was Oxygen OS, which was maintained by OnePlus, and for a long time was, I mean, it still is pretty good, but it was also one of the, you know, also one of the good Android distributions.
Well,
I
want to put a stop right here to the this portion of the history, and we will come back to it in just a minute. I want to discuss why people were putting on custom ROMs, and some of it the lack of updates, and that was a major problem in that time frame, like you were saying, because some got none whatsoever. And then another problem was, you know, your phones weren't as good as they are now, obviously, and they would come with just massive amounts of bloatware. And if you wanted to be able to properly customize your device, you needed to be able to rip everything off of it and put new stuff on it. And then also, if you wanted to de-Google-fy your life, this was the only way to do it. The only way to detach.
Yeah, because for Lineage, even now, if you want to install Lineage, you have to install Google services separately.
And during that time frame, the 2009 through 2000, I think 12, 13 time frame, Android basically like put major restrictions on itself when it came to things like accessing memory, which is, you know, one of the big things that you said you love about Android. They made it so that you couldn't access like the SD card except in very specific circumstances. So what was the point in getting a micro SD card on your phone if you couldn't access it? So that was one of the major reasons that brought me into the custom ROM scene. So
I agree with you 100%. It was a way that I used to get updates. I remember it was Android 2.2 Froyo, which allowed you finally to install apps to your micro SD card, because before that you can only install them to your onboard storage, and this is a time when onboard storage was 8 gig.
Yeah,
and you know, 16 if you're really, you know.
I do remember the custom ROMs having that little tick that you could do to say move all of your applications. Yeah.
It was fun times, I must say. It was the same time I was getting into Linux, so you know, the whole thing kind of all went together really for me. So Lineage OS was a successor, as I said, after the cluster fruitcake that was Cyanogen Inc. Please insert your own swear word. And it was rebranded as Lineage OS. Now, it was officially launched on Christmas Eve 2016 with the source code available. And in March 2017, it reportedly had 1 million users, with the OnePlus One, the one that I originally launched with a Cyanogen mod, being its most popular device. So a lot of the other Android distributions that we're going to discuss now are often forks of Lineage. Actually, maybe calling Lineage Ubuntu is probably not 100% correct. Calling it Debian might be a bit more correct, actually, because it is, you know, so many come from that. So one is EOS /E/OS. It was created by Gail Duval, the creator of Mandrake Linux, and it uses MicroG. Now, MicroG is an interesting project. Basically, it's reverse engineered Google Play services, and it hijacks Google API calls. So you can use Google Play services, but in a private manner. Now, it's not entirely open source. Some bits are proprietary. For example, it's got a proprietary Maps app and stuff like that. The privacy app, ironically, was proprietary as well. You can buy devices with it pre-installed. I remember seeing a review of one on Nick my Linux experiment, and it was really, it wasn't the best device in the world, I must say. You know, they were using for the time, relatively old hardware. The Free Software Foundation has declined to endorse E because it contains non-free libraries. Next Android distribution to talk about is Graphene OS. Security and privacy are your main reasons for an Android, maybe your reasons for an Android alternative, and Graphene fits the bill. Security hardened, top-notch privacy protection. The main developer has worked to make Graphene OS a completely secure mobile operating system. Even Edward Snowden endorsed Graphene OS and said that if he was configuring a smartphone today, he'd use as its base operating system. Interestingly, it only supports Pixel devices, including the latest Pixel 7 as well, which I find slightly ironic. Again, I've seen reviews of this. It is really good from a kind of from a privacy standpoint. Performance takes a hit, though. And now I'm not sure if that's because of the security apparatus that's built into the code, or the fact that the optimizations are often proprietary optimizations. I'm not sure entirely why, but it is something that. You know, if privacy and security are your thing, that's the thing to go for. Now, it doesn't even ship with Play Services or Micro G at all. So it's really a completely de-Googled Android fork. Again, kind of like de-Googled Chromium. Calyx OS is an OS, an Android distribution that I've actually tried. It preserves the Android security model using Android's verified boot, a system of cryptographic signing of the operating system, running a lock bootloader and an installer. It was publicly launched during 2018-2019. It was inspired by Tails and Cubes OS, and its goals were supposed to be making it completely open source, removing Google tracking, including apps for Tor, Signal, and Calyx VPN. It also basically only works on Pixels. I mean, they have started testing on Fairphone and OnePlus 8T9 and 9 Pro, but they then got pulled because of bootloader relock issues. I had a Pixel 4, which I put Calyx OS onto. It also has Micro G, and so you could use the Aurora Store for downloading apps and things like that. It worked pretty well, actually. Privacy was fine. You know, it ticked a lot of the boxes. And it is the kind of thing that you could use full time. In fact, for a short period of time, my daughter did use it. When she wanted to have use a phone for anything, we used to have it in the house, and so on Wi-Fi, and she used it as a normal phone. So you could even WhatsApp on it and stuff. I think of all of these kind of, and I admit that I am biased because this is the only one that I really tested properly compared to the others. But if you're going to go for one of these kind of security and privacy focused ones, Calyx OS is probably the one to go for. It's the website and the install process is very well laid out, shows you how to do everything. You can get a Pixel 4 for about $100 nowadays. And funnily, I even got a Google camera working on it. So, I mean, I even got the Pixel camera. So, okay, moving on to things which I would say aren't necessarily Android distributions. I would say they're more different operating systems, but again, Linux-based. So, Kai OS. It's basically a Linux-based OS. Forked from the discontinued Firefox OS. Anybody remember that? And it can run with apparently only 256 meg of RAM. And I have seen this on feature phones, and it's kind of like a stepping stone between the old feature phones that we used to have on, the old Nokias and Samsungs of the late 2000s. Compared to full-on smartphone operating systems. So, you can still get WhatsApp and YouTube and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And you can get it for, you know, it's really made for the developing markets, developing world. You can get it now. You get devices with it pre-installed on for as low as $10. There was one in India called the Jio phone. It was Jio is a network over there. And yeah, you could get ones which for $20-25. But actually, the last time I went to India, everybody's just got Android. Android just basically rules in India at the end of the world. Selfish OS has been around since 2013. It's currently in its fourth generation and is still being actively developed by the Finnish company Yola. And it's very Linuxy, you know, if you want to put it that way. If you think that Android is not Linux and Selfish is Linux, really. It's not built on Android, but it can run Android apps using a dedicated app support solution. You can buy devices with it pre-installed. Interestingly, it seems to work best on Sony devices. So, you know, the Xperia XA, Xperia X, they used to run it. User data is fully encrypted by its sandboxing solution called FireJail. All the connectivity and traffic runs behind a firewall with support for VPN. It has a distinctive visual style and a gesture-based UI. Before gesture-based UIs became the norm. So there's that. And then I suppose we should, before we get onto the odds and sods, actually, let me just quickly mention FireOS. This is a full-on fork of Android. It's a proprietary Android derivative. It still uses APK, it still uses the Linux kernel. But if you were using it, you probably wouldn't have any idea it's Android. It's basically made by Amazon, and it's known on Amazon devices. So the Kindle Fire tablets, etc. And it is a complete and utter complete fork. It looks very different. The whole point of FireOS is to make it easier for you to spend money on Amazon. I mean, you buy a Fire tablet and they even have ads on the lock screen. But this fact that it is basically Android has meant that you get, for a while, Fire Sticks, so the Amazon Fire Stick, became the most common Kodi device because you could download Kodi because Kodi is available for Android, and then people would put skins and whatever. And even now you can, say, install Plex on it and run a Plex server. So that's FireOS. And then the odds and sods, there's AOKP, the Android Open Kang project, which is another Android fork, which started in 2011. It supports APKs, entirely open source, highly customizable. There's Beidou Yi, which is the Chinese fork of Android, made by the company Beidou, and it's replaced its Google applications with its own. I still find it amazing that Google is banned in China, and you've got an entire ecosystem built on Android that has nothing to do with Google. And I'm not trying to say that that makes it better or worse. I just find that concept fascinating. It's just
that you can do that. Yeah, I find that amazing.
Yeah. There is Liwa OS, which is an Android derivative which is optimized for the Chinese language. So, and again, uses APK and contains some proprietary code. MIUI is, so it's written here, it's an iOS-like Android derivative. I'd push back on this. MIUI was one of these, it was one of these ROMs that came out, you know, in those 2012, 2011 time, and it did mimic a lot of iOS features, you know, lack of an app drawer, you know, all your apps on the same screen, even had the same aesthetic. And it then kind of became its own Android distribution. I have used it extensively, not on purpose in the sense of I never used it when it was a ROM that you could download. But when Xiaomi became a company and started selling its own hardware with MIUI on it, I bought a couple of Xiaomi devices. In fact, I think my wife and my mum both have them, I think. No, my wife and my sister. And it's a lot more like the Android we're used to now, you know, with its gestures and its app drawer and You know, often these devices will have two ROMs, you know, a Chinese and a global one. So one with Google services, one without Google services. And in fact, only yesterday I recommended a Xiaomi device to my cousin. He's still rocking a OnePlus 6T since 2018, and he was looking to buy a new phone. And I said to him that and also I am not sponsored by Xiaomi. However, if Xiaomi want to pay me ridiculous amounts of money to advertise their products, I have no ethical or moral objections to that. They launched their Xiaomi 13T Pro this week, which is a high-end phone, 12 gig of RAM, 512 gigs of storage, triple cameras with Leica tuning, Dimensity 9200 chipset, waterproofing, 120 watt charging, which sounds insane, for about $700. And if you buy it from their website as part of the introductory offer, they'll give you a Xiaomi Pad, so an Android tablet, which is worth $350 for free as well. So I said to him, maybe this is what you're looking for. And he's like, 512 gig of storage, I'll take that. Some of the other ones that I mentioned in the show notes, I think are pretty much discontinued now. So the Meizu was a company that made smartphones, and they used to have their own distribution called Flyme OS. I haven't seen any of them around for a while. Ophone was an embedded mobile Linux system. OmniROM was an open source Android distribution that uses APK but didn't really use the Google Play Store. Replicant was one of these early ROMs that came around the same time as the original Cyanogen mod. Again, its focus was on security. I don't think it's being actively used at the moment. And I've got to be completely honest, I've not heard of Zobot OS. Exobit, or however you pronounce it. It's an experimental project to replace Android's Java code with C#. Ooh, interesting. However, the project is no longer maintained. Its purpose was a proof of concept by Miguel de Icaza. Even though it's no longer used, its existence can still teach us that an OS can still function while being written in a different programming language. It also proves that Android does not need to be written in more than one language. And we hope that future programmers can learn from Miguel's experiment. Thank you, Miguel. And there's a link to its GitHub. And that what we've written about in the innards. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, I like all of this. Now, I thought it was written by Moss. Was it actually written by you, Majid?
No, it was written by Moss.
Okay, just making sure there. Now, in this, we've covered like all of the pluses, and we've covered a lot of the stuff that goes along with these different OSs. But one thing we haven't covered is why not to do this? Why not to put a custom ROM on your phone? And I just wanted to hit the highlights on that and also catch your guys'
thoughts.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
Now, it is not an easy process to put a custom ROM onto most of your phones, because you have to first get root on your phone, which is blocked. And then you have to be able to put you have to unlock the bootloader, which is also not easy, and it's a different process for each phone. And then you have to put on some type of recovery there so that you can put on your own special images, which is also a different process for each phone. And then once you get all that done and you find the correct OS for your phone, remember that there is a possibility to brick your phone by putting a custom ROM on it. I have had this happen on a couple of different occasions when I was running the HTC HD2 way back in the day. But let's say that you even get through all of that and you get the correct operating system on there and you get the recovery working and you load up the new operating system. Well, there's a flag in your BIOS that if your process to put your recovery on is not exactly right for your phone, then this flag gets set and you can no longer use things like Google Pay or Tap to Pay or anything like that. And it also voids your warranty. And a lot of the reasons, unless you're trying to get away from Google, aren't there anymore. You do have the access to the SD card. It is open and you can install basically whatever you want. Or even if you can't uninstall a lot of the bloat applications, you can put those bloat applications into a deep sleep mode where they're not really taking up anything other than a little bit of internal storage. They won't be getting updates. They won't be doing things in the background. So it does take away some of the functionality putting on a new operating system onto your phone, unless the people that have made the operating system have been very, very careful and have tested and checked to make sure that the flag's not tripped. And I can't remember the name of that flag right this second for the life of me. But I do remember the name of the application that you use to install TWRP, which is the recovery program.
Yeah.
And that was called Odin, which ran...
Odin, oh God, I remember Odin.
Right. Which ran a whole lot better in Windows than it ever did on Linux, I'm sorry to say. But, yeah, I mean, it's not like there's no risk in putting another operating system on there, or it's easy, because if it was easy, we'd probably be doing... Us distro hoppers would probably be doing it every other week.
The other thing to take into consideration is that in the past, a lot of those things that we don't like, so for example, you know, the voiding of the warranty and, you know, apps not getting trusted or whatever, didn't make a huge difference. But now they do. What I mean by that is mobile banking has become much more, it's become ubiquitous. Everybody's doing all their stuff on their phone. You can even pay in checks now by taking photos of it in the secure app of whatever banking institution you're with. PayPal, all sorts of other things. And if you've got a rooted phone, these apps will, because these apps work in containers, more secure containers, they will see that and they will refuse to work. And so, you know, you won't be able to do your banking and things like that anymore. And you then have to get something like Magisk, which is a piece of software which basically fools these apps that detect a rooted and modified bootloader and phone, and fools them to thinking that it's fine. And so your banking apps can still work. And you think to yourself, wait a minute, this is kind of the wrong way round. I want to do something secure, but it won't let me do it because I've got an unsecure system. So I am going to use an app now to tell the secure thing that my insecure thing is actually secure. It's kind of like, what was the point? Do you know what I mean? You might as well just go on. You might as well just go off and just blab your details to every Tom, Dick, and Abdullah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a big thing that affects it. And then also, again, you know, I mean, as much as we use our phones, we love to use our phones in the early 2010s, they were still basically communicator devices, not as much as multimedia devices as they are now. So, you know, things like Netflix and Disney and whatever will have inexplicable errors if you try to use it on a lot of these modded phones. And that's what caused or led to the development of Micro G. You know, as I said, this reverse engineered way of getting Google Play services without getting Google Play services and the tracking and telemetry and stuff like that. So there is an argument to be made that nowadays it is not something that you should be doing, except if you do have hardware that you still want to use that is no longer being maintained by the original manufacturer. So we have a OnePlus 6 in our house, which, by the way, I'd like to say was peak OnePlus, but I can talk about that ad nauseum for at another day. And it was on Android 11 and hadn't had a security patch for about 3 years. So I decided to put Lineage OS on it. Now, it was a phone that wasn't going to be doing banking. It wasn't going to be doing any of this, that kind of stuff. And now it's running Android 13. And it's running it reasonably well. And it gets the odd security patch. And it's a more usable device because of it. So they do still have a role in resurrecting hardware. But since support for a lot of that hardware is getting better anyway, maybe that will be less and less of a concern.
Yeah. Well, that's all I wanted to add.
Eric, you have any thoughts?
I was a serial ROM hopper for quite a number of years, and that was for good reason, to sort of get around limitations and to improve functionality, to lengthen support for the device and all of those things. And it just, I really stopped. I mean, it just was like something I was so into, and I followed it and tried every new thing. And I guess I had had enough negative experiences that were probably mostly of my own doing, but I just basically got to the point where my phone was supposed to be something that was reliable and dependable, and I was traveling a lot, and I needed it to be solid. So all of the flash of like trying different ROMs with different, you know, UIs and different launchers and all the, you know, the fun, interesting, enticing stuff, ultimately, if it wasn't one of the bigger ones that was more stable, then it really wasn't worth doing. And at some point, like, the features of Android kept improving and improving to a point where there was a lot of parity between, you know, something like a Cyanogen mod and, you know, modern Android. And so I just didn't see the need to do it anymore. And it did also get much more difficult with locked bootloaders and the devices themselves. And so it just got to a point where it really wasn't rewarding enough to go through the effort anymore. So and then I just sort of stopped doing it. So we had a question from Mark on YouTube about Harmony OS. I don't know if that's something that either of you have any experience with.
So I have seen it used on Huawei devices. So a bit of backstory. Due to US and China relations and worries about security and Chinese Communist Party and all this kind of stuff and the links that it had with Huawei was put onto this entity list, which meant that US manufacturers or anybody affiliated with US manufacturers could not work with it. What this basically meant was that it destroyed Huawei's business almost overnight. I mean, Huawei was on course in 2018, 2019 to really threaten Samsung's global dominance, which it still has. And then, you know, they weren't allowed to use Google. They weren't allowed to use any Google Play services. They weren't allowed to use 5G. They weren't allowed to use Qualcomm. And, you know, it basically destroyed their business overnight. So one of the ways that they got... Now, obviously, they were still big in China because they didn't need Google in China. And so they made their own version of Android called Harmony OS. And it was... The concept behind it was quite interesting. It was designed as a kind of not just a phone OS, but a kind of, I think did we talk about convergence on Linux OTC? It was kind of thought of as a kind of convergent device. You could have it on your smart home and your smart speaker, and you could have it on your PC, although I don't think any PCs were ever made with it on it. And it used to have this thing called, it had its own app store called the App Gallery, where you could basically find APKs from all around the internet. And they had this thing called Petal Search. So if you were looking for a particular app, it would. So actually, let me rephrase that. So the App Gallery was Huawei's own app store, and Petal Search was you search for an app, and it would search the internet, find you an APK that you could then download and install. And it didn't really work, is the short answer. It just became too much of a headache for people who were using it. And Huawei basically, I think, kind of understood that they were never really going to get back to anywhere where they were in the West. And so actually what they did was they just kind of gave up. And, you know, it would be quite difficult to find a Huawei device if you actually wanted to buy one. I think you can still get them in India. And obviously they're still available in China. Interestingly, Huawei used to have a sub-brand called Honor. And I remember when Honor was launched around 2014 time. And it was launched as this kind of online first brand for digital natives, you know, people who would buy their phones online, and you know, that's how it worked. And they were quite popular for making kind of cheaper mid-range devices. And they basically spun it off completely and separated it out from the main company. Although how much is it really separated out is a conversation that YouTubers sometimes talk about. Like the new Honor phones that are coming out, the Honor 70, the Honor 90, the Magic 4 Pro. They do look like rebadged Huawei devices. But officially speaking, there is no connection between the two. It's been completely spun off, has a completely independent structure. And most importantly, this therefore means it's not under the entity ban. So it can use Google services and Google Play and Qualcomm and all that sort of jazz. That's what I know about Harmony OS.
Got it. Thank you for the question, Mark.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice to know at least one person was listening live.
Oh, dude, yeah. The audio cut out. You know what I mean? Oh, well, for you guys, it cut out. Mine is still working, but yours cut out. Oh, all that awesome stuff you just said, it's cut out.
Okay, fine.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. Well, you'll have to listen in the episode then. Yeah, get funky. Said audio seems to not be working at the moment.
My cat, when it jumped off of me, it like slammed into one of my cables. So I've been trying to fix it since. You should be working now.
So it'll be in the episode. It'll be in the episode. It's just an excuse for people to listen to us all over again. It was a kind of like a cliffhanger of a question. He asked the question, and just as I was saying the answer, the audio cut out, and he probably went, "No."
Sorry about that. Yeah, my cat kicked it, and my camera kicked off, and my audio just went all over the place. And OBS is like, "What audio source?" So it's fixed now for the last 5 minutes of the show.
Okay, fine. So anyway, I think that is a sign from upon high that we should be starting to wrap this up. Vibrations from the ether. Indeed.
Now,
there are no vibrations from
the ether. There actually is, but it was $4, so I decided not to put it into this episode, and we'll do it the next time Bill is on.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yes, Bill couldn't be with us today. Don't get worried, nothing bad has happened, but I just wanted to say it in that manner. Okay, in the check this out. Well, GNU has just celebrated its 40th birthday. On September 27th, 1983, Richard Stallman posted a message on the Net Unix Wizards and Net.usoft newsgroups announcing that he was going to write a complete Unix compatible software system called GNU for GNU's Not Linux, and will give it away to everyone who can use it. Am I right in saying that GNU has never actually been finished? Like GNU on its own, the GNU herd that you can like download. I'm sure I read somewhere that it's never actually had a stable release. Anyway, doesn't matter. You can find the original posts and a little bit more about GNU and the GNU project at the links that are in the show notes. Housekeeping and announcements. Thank you for listening to this episode of Mincast. If you see something you'd like to hear about, tell us. Send us an email at mincast@mincast.org. Join us live on YouTube. Post at the Mincast subreddit. Chat with us on Telegram and Discord. Discord's the place for the cool guys. Or you can post directly at mincast.org. Our next episode will be 2 p.m. Central Time on Sunday, October 7th at 2023. And there's a link to get that converted to your time zone. Next roundtable live stream, 2 p.m. U.S. Central Standard Time on Saturday, October 21st, 2023. And there's a link to get that converted to your time zone. Livestream information is at mincast.org/livestream. Time to wrap this up. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, if you like the sound of my voice, I'm on a couple other podcasts, usually with Eric. I'm on the Linux Link Tech Show, which is at tllts.org. I'm on the Linux Lugcast, which is at linuxlugcast.com. You can send me an email directly, jb@mincast.org, or buy me a coffee with Ko-fi, and link in the show notes.
Moss, who couldn't be with us today, but we're very grateful for his work on the innards. He will be, you can find him on Full Circle Weekly News, Distro Hopper's Digest, and bardmoss@pm.me. He's on Mastodon at Zyvella at hosttux.social, and his other contact information can be found on itsmoss.com. Bill, who also unfortunately couldn't be with us today, is available on bill@mincast.org, bill_h on Discord, @wchauser3 at fostodon.org on Mastodon, @wchauser3 on Twitter, wchauser3 on Facebook, and check out his other podcasts, Linux OTC and Three Fat Truckers. I'm Majid, and you can get a hold of me on drmajid@mincast.org. Don't bother trying to get me on Twitter because Elon has locked me out of that. So you're best off trying to find me as the Atypical Anaesthetist on Instagram, the Atypical Anaesthetist podcast on Spotify.
You can hear me and see me on this and the Linux OTC podcasts, as well as the Linux Saloon and Linux Lugcast streams. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I can be reached by email at eric@mintcast.org or Discord, Telegram, Matrix, and Mastodon. The links are in the show notes.
So, before we leave, we want to make sure to acknowledge some of the people who make Mincast possible. Someone will do our audio editing. Who that is, I'm not entirely sure.
It will probably be
Bill.
Majid.
It's definitely not going to be me. Mate, I don't know how to do audio editing at all. If you want a dead episode, send it my way.
Good time to learn.
Archive.org for hosting our audio files, Hopstar for our logo, InitRD for the animated Discord logo, Londoner for our time sinks and various other contributions. Londoner is the hidden hand that keeps this whole thing afloat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Bill Hauser for hosting the server which runs our website maintenance, and the Nextcloud server on which we host our show notes and raw audio. And finally, the Linux Mint development team for the fine distro we love to talk about. Thanks, Clem.
And Linux and Mint company is my daily driver, just to say that.
This has been another episode of the Mintcast podcast. The show notes for this episode are at mintcast.org. You can send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. You can find more information about Linux Mint at www.linuxmint.com. You can follow both Mintcast and Linux Mint on Twitter, @mintcast and @linux_mint. Thanks to Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com for our theme music, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Mintcast.